You're listening to The Hudson River, a weekly half-hour program about the nature, culture, and beauty of one of America's great waterways. The Hudson River is produced at Vassar College and brought to you in cooperation with this radio station. I'm your host, Mark Breslov. Coming up, we speak with Robert H. Boyle, author of The Hudson, A Natural and Unnatural History, about the history of environmentalism on the Hudson and the impact it had on modern-day environmental laws nationally. We talk with Gail Godwin, longtime companion to the late Robert Starrer, about his musical composition, Hudson Valley Suite. And we hear about the migration of monarch butterflies viewed from Croton Point Park and listen to the sounds of Englewood Falls. All this and more next on the Hudson River. On this week's Hudson River Culture segment, we talk with author Gail Godwin, longtime companion to the late Robert Starrer, about his musical composition, Hudson Valley Suite. She tells us how the piece came about, and we hear an excerpt of its first movement.
The Hudson Valley Philharmonic commissioned Robert to write this, and they premiered it first in 1983 when Imre Palo was conducting, and then they played it again in 1994, and then it was recorded by the Albany Symphony, and it's been played by a number of other symphonies. A musical theme goes right through it that represents the personality of the river as it goes through its various stages. It's first very narrow and sources, you know, the first movement, small fragments, trills, runs, and he had in mind there that these ideas and musical fragments would accumulate just the way small tributaries gather strength in a river. And then this theme goes through all the movements, and you can recognize it at different points.
On this week's Hudson River feature, we speak with Robert H. Boyle, author of The Hudson, A Natural and Unnatural History, and founder of Riverkeeper. Boyle tells us about some of the history of environmentalism on the Hudson and the impact it had on modern-day environmental laws nationally. He begins with the story of the Storm King Mountain controversy in the mid-60s, which led to the federal law requiring environmental impact statements and gave American citizens standing for the first time to sue in defense of the environment.
That was the original galvanizing movement, was the Storm King fight, followed by the fight against pollution in the river.
Folks also may not know much about the Storm King controversy. Can you just explain it in a nutshell, what happened?
In 1963, the Consolidated Edison Company in New York City proposed building a pump storage hydroelectric plant at Cornwall, New York, on the Hudson River, on Storm King Mountain. There would be turbines down in the river, and the turbines would be used to pump water uphill through tunnels inside Storm King to a reservoir in a place appropriately named Mount Misery. And this reservoir would be created by like a bathtub. And when the power company, Con Edison, wanted power, they would pull the plug on the bathtub up on the top of the mountain, and the water would run back down through the tunnels and turn the turbines, generating electricity to meet what Con Edison called peak power demand. Peak power demand being that day on the 18th of July, when suddenly at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, the heat got to be 98 and all the air conditioners went on all throughout the Con Ed system. Interestingly enough, it would take 3 kilowatts of power to pump the water from the Hudson River up through the tunnels to the reservoir, and it would only get 2 kilowatts when the water came back down. But they said, well, that will meet the peak need. We said that there were other things that could meet the peak need, such as gas turbine generators that you could start right up. The other thing, which was completely off the wall, was that Con Ed put a fisheries biologist on the stand in front of the Federal Power Commission, who said that he can guarantee that this plant would have no impact on the fishes of the river because they all spawn much further upstream. Well, that was false. It turned out that this biologist, in fact, had hired two other biologists who had done the initial study on striped bass spawning and found that the majority of the eggs that they had found were right in the vicinity of the Storm King plant. And he had testified in front of the Federal Power Commission that the last study on the Hudson River had been done in 1936, and here was a 1957 study that he didn't mention at all. So we immediately said, reopen the hearing. You know, this is important information. Mm-hmm. Federal Power Commission wouldn't do it. That and the aesthetic issues as to what this would do with the construction of the power plant and the power lines through the scenic highlands, those were the two issues that were ignored by the Federal Power Commission, which prompted Scenic Hudson, which had formed to fight this, to take it to the Second Circuit Federal Court of Appeals.
It's probably not widely known or appreciated, but the Storm King fight resulted in the foundation of modern environmental law. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Well, it gave us standing. Up until then, if you said, I don't like this power plant going in on this river, I don't like this that's going to affect that natural resource, you were locked out. It was a big decision. I'll never forget the names of the judges who issued the decision that overturned the original license given to Storm King. It was in the Second Circuit Federal Court of Appeals. Lombard, Waterman, and Hayes. I remember them like tinkers to Evers to Chance. And Lombard, Waterman, and Hayes gave standing to citizens to protect a natural resource. And that was affirmed by the Supreme Court of the United States.
And then the National Environmental Policy Act is based on that precept, is it not?
To an extent, you know, one flows out of another. Actually, many of those laws were passed during the Nixon administration. Clean Water Act, NEPA, all of these things. When you look back on it, it's extraordinary. But in the late 60s, there were many things going on at the time that I think caused the environmental movement to begin to coalesce. We had a drought in New York in the early 60s. Where was the water going to come from? Why couldn't we use this water? Well, why wasn't that water clean? We had a federal highway program that was just ramming right through parks. There was the Storm King case. I mean, America was on a binge of so-called progress that was absolutely disastrous. And the pesticide problem that Rachel Carson brought to life with Silent Spring.
So actually, the connection to modern environmental law was they were basically saying you had to consider environmental impact, do an environmental impact statement.
Correct, which didn't, long before there were any environmental impact statements.
Right, and that is a precept, is it not, of the NEPA, of the National Environmental
Correct.
Policy Act.
Correct.
So really, we have this controversy to thank, and your work and others' work on it, for the fact that there are now environmental impact statements required around the country for these kind of things.